Today we'll be in Ephesians 6, 5 through 9, as Tim read earlier, with a message titled, Unlocking Freedom in the Workplace. Now, Paul is writing to a society and work structure that is, thankfully, very foreign to ours today in America. But the principles and the potential benefits that we can continue to have through his words, through God's words and instruction, easily cross a 2,000-year chasm to us today. William Barclay wrote about the prevalence of slavery in the Roman Empire during this time that this letter was written. It has been computed that in the Roman Empire there were more than 60 million slaves. 60 million. Even doctors and teachers, the closest friends of the emperors or secretaries in different positions like that in finance, who dealt with letters and appeals, all of those positions were positions of slavery. Basically, the life of a slave was grim and terrible. There were exceptions, as there's always exceptions. By law, the slave was not a person. It was a thing. Many of you are familiar with Aristotle or have read his words or some of his writings. Aristotle once wrote, "A slave is a living tool, just as a tool is an inanimate slave." That's the perspective. That's what was understood, and that's who this letter goes to that Paul is writing. But every Christ follower today can benefit from Paul's teachings in these verses. Students, those in the workforce, and even those who are retired can benefit from this text today. The average American worker roughly works 2,000 hours a year. Some of you may say, well, I wish I just worked 2,000 hours a year. Some of you may work more than that, but that's an average. But on top of the over 2,000 hours a year that we work as Americans, those 8 hours are usually the best ones you've got. When you're most energetic, most ready to go, those hours are spent laboring for somebody else. Shouldn't we strive to maximize our joy in the majority of the working, waking hours that we spend? I think that we should try to find joy and satisfaction in those work hours. I'm passionate about these guiding principles and potential benefits for those who adhere to them, to God's principles today. Why? Probably mainly because I have been a very miserable employee before. Not now. Don't get to thinking. Not now. But in my life, I have absolutely... I didn't like Sunday because Sunday was the day that came before Monday. And Monday was the day that I despised. This is how it used to be. And then I would look forward to Friday because Friday was the only day that had some true reprieve in Saturday. But then I was back to Sunday. And that's how I lived my life for a number of years. I despised it. Would it have been the same if I had had these principles? I don't know. But I think these principles and what God has for us today, whether you're miserable at work, whether you're happy at work, I believe there's something here that can help you today. If we desire to unlock freedom in the workplace, we must obey our masters, render good service, and believe that God is the ultimate master. Those are the three things that we're going to see. So let's look at the first step for unlocking freedom in the workplace. Obey your masters. And we see this in verses 5 and 6. Paul writes to slaves. That's the very first word. That's who this part is. And if you've been with us in Ephesians, which has been a very helpful yet stinging text to work through, he talked about going back. He talked about how husbands and wives should live together and act together. And then he went forward. And last week we talked about it, how we should treat our children. And then now these instructions just take us into the workplace, take us where we go and make a living. And so you see how Paul has done these things. Thankfully, I want to say this, formal slavery in the United States is no more. It's been eradicated, and I'm thankful for that. However, the majority of us today are employees working to fulfill the goals of another person, sometimes against our will. The primary command in verse 5 is right there out of the gate. Be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh. Be obedient. There's the number one thing. What does obedience mean? We talked about it last week and it didn't change over the last 6 days. It means to hear and to do. So we are to hear and to do what our masters have called us to do. We see a great illustration of how they were obedient, how slaves were obedient to their masters in the illustration in Matthew 8:8-9, when the Roman centurion came up to Jesus wanting his slave to be healed. But when he responds back to Jesus, we see how they acted, what the relationship was like. Matthew 8:8-9 says, "But the centurion said to Jesus, 'Lord, I am not worthy for you to come under my roof, but just say a word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man under authority with soldiers under me.'" And here's the relationship. "I say to this one, 'Go,' and he goes. 'And to another, 'Come,' and he comes. 'And to my slave, 'Do this,' and he does it." So the slaves were typically obedient to the masters. They did everything that their masters told them to do. Paul is instructing us to also be obedient to our masters. Slaves or employees are to hear and do what they're commanded, but there is one caveat. As we talked about last week, sometimes there are abusive parents that ask children to do things that go against God, and we're not to do those things that go against God. Same thing as an employee. If your employer is telling you to go against God, and we're going to see a great illustration with the apostles with this here shortly, we're not to go against God over our master. But if it's not going against God, he's clearly telling us to be obedient. Not always easy. And just in case there was a question about the quality of our obedience, he doesn't leave anything out. He tells us exactly the quality of obeying that we should do. First thing is with fear and trembling. What is fear? In the Greek, it's phobos, phobos. Where do we get that? What does that sound like to us? Phobia. Like one of mine is, I think it's acrophobia, the fear of heights. I don't like heights. I'm scared of them because I think I'm going to die every time if I might fall. But this word for fear, we see it in Herod when he's tricked into killing John the Baptist. In Matthew 14:5, although Herod wanted to put him to death, he feared the crowd. He had a phobos of the crowd because they regarded John as the prophet. See, fear can calm our fleshly passions and allow us to obey worldly leaders. We're a tough lot, us humans. We're hard-headed and strong-willed, and sometimes we need a little fear to get us where we're going. If you grew up with parents who were disciplinarians, you understand a little fear goes a long way. Trembling is the other part, and it's similar to fear, but it's qualified by respect. So it's fear with respect. We see trembling in two other parts of the Bible. When the two Marys went to the tomb, the empty tomb on Easter morning, one of the characteristics that they had, one of the emotions that they experienced when they saw that the tomb was empty, it said that they trembled. They had fear and they trembled. Another time is Paul writes of the qualities that as we work out our salvation, we should work it out with two things: fear, and what's the second one? Trembling. So these are good things to have in this realm. But to what level are we to fear and tremble? You may be talking about, I don't want to work in fear. I don't want to be constantly scared. To that, I would answer that it's a reverential fear. It's a functional fear, a healthy one. The next quality will dive deeper into the root of our serving. in the sincerity of our heart. Sincerity means singleness, oneness, the quality of being free from pretense, deceit, and hypocrisy. So it's the opposite of those things is sincerity. And when it says in the heart, is he talking about this thing that pumps in our chest a bunch of times a day? No, this is when he uses the word heart here, it's the deepest part of us. It's the most pure, the fullness of our mind. That's where we should be sincere, in the deepest part of our being. And who are we to be sincerely, who are we to sincerely serve? Our masters. And then he gives a level of obedience. So he just keeps ratcheting it down further and further. The level of obedience that we're to have is as to Christ. We're to obey our masters to the same level, the same height as we seek to obey Jesus Christ himself. We'll have a little more on this later. Paul will also instruct on what we're not to do. So here's the negative side. He says, this is how you do it on this side. This is what not to do. Not by way of eye service as men pleasers. So no eye service, no seeking to only please men. What is eye service? Well, this is a term coined by Paul to express the conduct of slaves who work only when they are watched, and whose motive, therefore, is not fidelity to duty, but either to avoid punishment or to gain reward from their masters. It's not sincere. It's the opposite of sincere. He wrote about it again. This was a passion point for Paul. In Colossians 3:22, he says, "Slaves, in all things, obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external service as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord." It's just a double down of what we're reading today in Ephesians. And Paul really, he lived out not pleasing man, not seeking to only please man. Galatians 1:10 says, For I am now seeking the favor of men or of God. Or am I striving to please men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be a bond servant of Christ. Paul sought to please Jesus Christ, not merely please men with eye service. So a question for us, let's just make it practical. Let's take it into your workplace, into my workplace. Do we only work when the boss is watching us? Is that when we have that fervor to get things done, when we know the boss has come in the room and he's looking around there? Is that the only time that you're really getting after it? Or do you have the integrity to do that when they're not watching? In one of my careers, we had cameras in the room, the eye in the sky. And I was thinking, when was the last time that I remember eye service or anything like that? Well, one day, there's this part of the work that we did that the nurse and the doctor had two parts. Each of us had a part. And there was a specific part that the nurse was supposed to do, and there's this part the doctor was supposed to do. Well, let's just be honest. The doctor's the most important person. He's the one with the knife. He's the one doing the work, right? So he's the one that should know what he's doing. So we typically, because of the way that he was, he liked to do the whole thing, and we would just kind of sit there and watch, and that was a part of the thing. And we just let him handle it, thought that was cool because he's the one that needed to know anyway. Well, they told us that day that, hey, we're going to be watching on the camera this part of the thing. What do you think we did that day? Did we just kind of step back and let the doctor do the whole thing? Or do you think that we did our part where they could see that we were doing our part and that he did his part? We did that. We made sure that we did exactly what we're supposed to do and he did. But why? Why do we do that? Why is that? Why do we not just do the standard every day? If this is the standard, if this is what they've called us to do, why do we not do that? We're just human and we make these mistakes. But that's eye service. That's not purity. That's not sincerity. We should always work as hard as if the boss is in the room with us, the manager's in the room with us. That's how we should be working. Well, let's make it spiritual for just a second. Do we only follow Christ when our fellow Christians can observe us? That gets a little deeper. I can remember going off and playing baseball and getting away from mama and daddy and getting around all the hooligans that I played with. And one of the things they loved was real colorful language. Y'all know what I'm talking about? The real colorful descriptive adjectives that that's what everybody else was doing. So I got into doing that. You're part of the group. You fall in line and use those colorful adjectives just like them. But do you think that I packed that up when I left from Montgomery to go back to Hayden, Alabama for the weekend? No, I left them down there. I packed all my clothes, but I left them down there. What's the difference? Was it more important for me to serve just mom and dad and my fellow Christians when I was around them? Or shouldn't it have been the same importance or more importance? Because I don't think God stops watching. I don't think that it becomes less important to Him. So in the physical realm, we should work. But in the spiritual realm, we should be working too. Because our boss, I'm not trying to get ahead of ourselves, but the ultimate master, guess what he's doing? He's watching. He's paying attention. He deserves our glory, but I don't know how much we think about that. This applies to both sides. So what motivates us to perform eye service? What is it that's generating that? Commonly, self-preservation. We don't want to be punished. We'll just do the eye service just so that the boss will be satisfied and then we don't get wrote up or whatever happens in your realm. But if that's what you're doing right now, or that's what I'm doing right now, I've got a question that I think will really help you. How do you feel when you are the recipient of somebody else's eye service? How does it feel when they're only just appeasing you when you're around, but there's no sincerity in the work that they're doing? Parents, y'all know what that feels like? It's not good. And the negative emotion that it generates inside us, we should realize that and realize that that's all we're doing to somebody else is generating that same negative emotion within them. And then how are they going to feel? This is a Christian. This person claims to follow Christ, that it's important to him, and the only time I can get him to work is when I put a camera in the room. What about that integrity? What kind of example are we setting? See, this all goes back to how we glorify God with everything that we do. Instead of eye service, the alternative, Christians are to obey their masters as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the very heart. And Paul reveals right here the key motivator for every Christian employee. I think this is the key. I think this is the key that I didn't have in many, many, many times in my life. And it's a key not only for then, this is a key for now, this is a key for those who don't even have an employer that are retired and have made it to the other side. In the end of the day, at the end of the day, we're not really serving or obeying that worldly master. Bob, Jim, whatever their name is, at the end of the day, with what we're doing, we're serving the master. It is God who we're serving in the end, not Bob or Jim or Jill or whomever it may be. It's God. G-O-D is who we're serving. And no matter how mundane, no matter how, and I know there's some horrible, horrible situations that I don't even know about. I'm not being unsympathetic or insympathetic. Well, I don't even know what the right word I said wrong every time. I'm not without sympathy towards that bad situation. But I think the only way to alleviate the worst situation, the worst work environment, is to realize, and these are slaves. They didn't even get paid. They just had to do what they were supposed to do. At least we do get paid. But I think the only way to alleviate that is at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day, we realize that I'm not working for you. Yes, you are telling me what to do, but it is God whom I serve. I'm giving my best efforts, not for you necessarily, but for God. And knowing that it is the King that we're serving, I think is the only way that we'll ever be alleviated out of some of these horrible situations that we're in. We can work for any worldly boss if we are ultimately working for God purely from the heart. If God asked you how you were treating your boss, what would you say? If Jesus walked in here right now and he said, I need everybody just to form a line and I got some questions for you guys. And one of the questions was, well, how are you treating your boss? How would you respond? If you had to tell the truth. Secondly, if God asked you how well you performed your most recent task at work, what would you say? At the end of the day, we're all human and we're strong and we're self-willed creatures. Barclay also wrote this, Christianity does not offer us escape from circumstances. It offers us conquest of circumstances. Although difficult, we can be successful in obeying our masters if we will continuously see that Jesus is the one that we are serving and obeying, not just our worldly bosses. The second step for unlocking freedom in the workplace is render service worth reward. Paul now commands slaves to render quality service. He says, with goodwill. What does that mean? How do we describe goodwill? Eagerness, wholeheartedly, with enthusiasm and humility. That's good. And Paul doubles down on the motivation as to the Lord. God is the focus. Do we render our best service to the Lord with eagerness and enthusiasm? Let's just go beyond our boss. Because God is our ultimate boss. Are we rendering service to God each day, each week with enthusiasm? Are we excited about it? Do we have humility as we're doing it? Are we eager to serve the Lord? Do I serve the church with eagerness, with excitement, with enthusiasm? Do I write my sermons with enthusiasm? Do I wake up excited to get in there and get my face punched in every time I look at this all week for all how bad I am to tell you guys? Am I excited? Am I enthusiastic? Am I doing it to the best of my ability? Don't worry, I'm going to get to y'all in just a second. Do you teach with enthusiasm? Your children, your church, otherwise? Do you attend church with enthusiasm? Were y'all excited it was Sunday morning and we get to go worship the Lord this morning? We get to meet over there at the house of God with fellow believers, and I cannot wait to go to Sunday school, and I cannot wait to lift my praises to the Lord, and I really cannot wait until Philip starts preaching. It's not going to be awesome. It's going to be a great day. Is that where y'all were? Or are y'all going, man, it is Sunday again, and if I don't, I guess we'll go there to church and at least we'll get to eat afterwards. And, you know, we just got to make it through the songs. And then hopefully Philip won't go over again today. And then, where are you at? Are you eager and enthusiastic with humility as we serve God? That's just one little element. I venture to say that you and I all desire good service, enthusiastic service wherever we go. If I went to eat lunch with you, I guarantee it would prove that you do want good service wherever you go. Amen? I spent a little time with a new friend this week as we were riding around, and he was telling me all about these different places or whatever, and we passed by this one place and he said, boy, I'd never take you there. Oh, why? The service is pitiful. I wouldn't take anybody there. You see how important service is? They lost business just in that one. You think I'm going to go as soon as the next time I have a chance to go eat? But I know a place we can go. We can go to this place that has horrible service. No, I'm not going to go. Service is important to us. Guess who else service is important to? God. I bet you could tell me the restaurants and venues with the best service. If I stopped right now and started calling on you and said, who has good service? Who has good? It'd be Chick-fil-A, Publix, Disneyland, or Disney World, whatever the one is. They probably both are. I don't know. We recognize it. We know it. Why? And do we go there? Absolutely. Every time you get your pocketbook out, you're probably going to go to these places with good service. It's important to us. We should also provide quality service to our earthly masters. If we appreciate it, it should be motivation for us to also give it. But ultimately, we have to provide quality service to the Lord. Because I know He's providing, He has served well. Did Jesus serve us well? Amen. I don't know if you need any additional motivation for this, but Paul gives it. He writes, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. There's basically three things that I want you to take out of this. The first one is that all service is not equal. We've talked about that. Y'all understand that. But he says, whatever good thing each one does. So not just any act of service, not the eye pleasing, not the man pleasing, but the good service is what is going to be compensated. And that brings us to the second truth. God compensates those who serve their masters and Him well. God compensates. But also human. Sometimes we just serve to the level that we think that we're compensated for. Y'all ever been there? I learned this lesson really young when I was cutting grass. I've cut a lot of grass. I agreed to cut the grass for X amount of dollars. I said, okay. And I was happy to cut it for that until I made it to the weed-eating portion. I didn't realize that I had signed up to weed-eat at Callaway Gardens. Had 500,000 things to weed-eat around. And so what do you think I did? I should have charged more money. They didn't. This is not enough money to weed-eat around all this. So I just started kind of helping them with some of those shrubs so that next time the compensation would be a little bit better. That's what we do in work. We look at that and we go, it's not worth it. And then guess what? When we get there and we realize that it's not worth it, we should be paid more, then we just start performing less. That's not the plan. We should perform at the good level no matter what the compensation is. Why? Because everyone in all classes will be compensated by God Himself. Who would we rather be paid by at the end? Money that we can't take with us? Or eternal blessings from God who can give us everything. This statement here at the very end, notice it says, whether slave or free, this is a revolutionary statement for this time. Slaves and masters had no relationship other than work. There was no friendship. There was no equality. Like they did, like today, we try to see everybody as the same. You know, equality is really big today. That was not a priority for them. We have no problem with us being up here and you being down there. But right here, he says, no matter where you are in this worldly system, whether you're up here and you're down there, it's all the same. We all should do good work, and God is going to compensate equally to both parties. Are we focused on rendering good service to our world masters and God? Do we have a focus for it? And can we gain a new motivation and energy to serve our masters and God as we head into Monday? Can this help you that you're really serving God at the end of the day instead of your boss? Can that give you the motivation and the energy to serve at the level that we're being called to serve? I'm sure. There's only a couple things I'm sure of, and I'm sure that the majority of this church is going to get an opportunity to apply this text in about less than 24 hours. What about 20 hours, 18 hours? You're going to get a chance because you're going to be right back in the grind tomorrow morning to serve and to work. And how will you do? Will you take this to heart and serve to the level that God's called us to or not? Let's pursue rendering service worth reward from God. The third step for unlocking freedom in the workplace is believing that God is the ultimate master. Paul shifts his directive from slaves, from employees over here to their managers, to the master. So he doesn't leave anybody out in his instruction. And he does not provide an escape. He doesn't give a whole new set of things. He says, you do these same things. Masters, you're over them. You're the manager. You do the same thing that I'm telling these slaves to do for you. But then he goes in addition. So they've got all the things that they should do, plus one more. And what is it? Give up threatening. Stop threatening them. What does threatening mean? That's declaring harm towards others. Y'all ever get threatened? Are y'all the ones threatening people? Does threatening people motivate them to give good service? Does it motivate them to be obedient? In Acts 4, this is what I was talking about earlier, the apostles, after Jesus had ascended, were going around and they were telling everybody about Jesus, and they were doing miracles and they were doing the work of the Lord, and the Sanhedrin hated it, and they captured them and they brought them before them. And what did they do to them? They threatened them. They threatened their punishment. They threatened their life if they didn't quit talking about Jesus. And the Bible doesn't tell us that they were like, oh, I've been threatened. I better obey what you said. I better not tell anybody about Jesus. We better stop this campaign that we got going on. No. All it did is give them an energy to go against what they had been threatened. Very ineffective in the realm of the apostles. How do I respond when I'm threatened? Well, if I'm not filled with the Holy Spirit, I'm probably going to threaten and fight back. I'm probably not going to tell you I love you. How can I help you? Sometimes threatening has led me to perform the very worst, least, minimum, sad amount that I can possibly do. Sometimes threatening has led me quitting altogether. And none of those things were they trying to achieve by threatening me. But that's the result. So when we threaten other people, maybe you're a manager, maybe you're over a number of people, and threatening is what you've been using to try to achieve obedience, it's probably not going to work if obedience and good work is what you're trying to get them to do. And that's what Paul is teaching here. I worked for a manager one time that I didn't know this until later on, that ruled, that managed only by threat. Prior to going into the medical field, I had only worked for men. I had cut grass, which I was the boss, good boss, and I had worked in electric motors, and it was men from the everybody I dealt with, and I was used to that, and I was used to that environment. But when I went in the medical field, it swapped. And I realized that I was no longer in an electric motor shop anymore around those guys, so I thought it would be different. But what I didn't know is that I really just had a manager that managed by threatening. I was always worried that I was going to get fired. Like, that was the number one thing. Like, that was the compliance thing. If you don't do this, you're going to get fired. If you don't do that, you're going to get fired. If you get caught doing this, you're going to get fired. If you're going to fire, I was petrified. Like, I was beyond the healthy fear. I was worried that I was going to be able to continue to pay my mortgage if I did anything wrong. And I didn't realize that that was abnormal in the medical field until I got a job by somebody else. And it was so bad. Like, I had been so trained under that system that I constantly would ask them questions. Was that good? Did I do a good job with that? And they're like, why do you keep asking this if you're doing a good job? I said, but because they told me they'd fire me if I didn't do a good job in the other one. They're like, you have got to relax. Like, we're not here today to fire you. We're here today to help you be better and to be the best employee that you can be. And I was like, man, this is cool. I wish I would have been over here a long time ago. Threatening is not healthy. From a person who's experienced it, it's not good. And Paul is speaking against it. I never want to make someone be obedient through threatening and make it difficult for them. I never want somebody to be miserable in the work that they're doing if I was a manager or a master over them. But here's the ultimate, as we bring it all together, here's the ultimate reminder and motivation for masters specifically in this verse, but also for slaves. Their master and yours is in heaven. So even though you're a worldly master, even though you're a worldly manager, you are still subject to God Himself. And that's the way that you should conduct yourself. No matter, you may be the CEO, the president. You're not the ultimate president. You will always have one over you. And you know who that is? God Himself. And it says that God is the ultimate master and also not partial, not a respecter of persons. And we shouldn't be partial either. Maybe you're a manager or going to be one. We shouldn't be partial. Here's four verses that also solidify this. Romans 2:11, for there is no partiality with God. James 2:1, my brethren, do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord and Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. 1 Timothy 5:21, I solemnly charge you in the presence of God and of Christ Jesus and of His chosen angels to maintain these principles without bias, doing nothing in a spirit of partiality. Proverbs 28:21, to show partiality is not good, because for a piece of bread a man will transgress. So do you believe in God as your ultimate master? Is He your ultimate master? That's where it all begins. Compliance with any of this, from the first to the last, hinges upon, is God your ultimate master? Do you believe in God? Have you professed Jesus Christ as Lord? Do you follow Him? That's the beginning. Without that, there's no hope for obedience. And if that's true, if you do believe and you've done those things, do you want to glorify Him? Do I want to glorify Him? One specific way that we can bring Him glory is by working and following these principles that He's outlined for us today. If we seek to glorify God, then we must ultimately obey Him and follow His principles for working. Andrew, you and the worship team can come up. So God has created and commanded us to work. He gave us work. God, led by example, worked 6 days to create all this that we experience today. But I do not believe that God has designed and desired misery in work. If we want freedom in the workplace, then we will have to follow God's plan. I genuinely believe that adhering to God's principles for working will accomplish two things. We will glorify God with our service and obedience. And two, we'll be able to find peace and purpose in whatever work that God has called us to do. If you're ready to unlock freedom in the workplace, then know that all the work that you do is for God. And ultimately, let God be the one that you seek to satisfy.